What's good, everybody? Welcome to Origin Story, the podcast that interviews creators about where they came from to understand how they got here. My name's Philip Russell, and I'm here with my co-host,
Ben Thorpe.
And Ben, today we talked to Greg Lobanov and Alexis Dean Jones, who both worked on and created a new indie title called Chicory, A Colorful Tale. It's basically like a painting game where you play as a dog wielding a magical paintbrush. And if you've played a game similar to like Legend of Zelda or something like that, you kind of are going around solving puzzles with your paintbrush and coloring in a black and white world with all the colors that you deem appropriate. It's a really cute game and super inventive, and it deals kind of with, imposter syndrome, mental health, and, you know, the creative process. It was a really interesting conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I think that summary is such a hard game to summarize in some ways, because it's a game that is like, on the one hand, it's a walkable kind of coloring book. You walk around with your character and you can kind of color within some lines. But then, as I think you're talking about, it's also a game that's kind of about imposter syndrome and mental health. I think it's really concerned with like the burden of creation and like how that weighs on you, feeling like you're kind of putting something out into the world. And then, all the different characters in the game will sometimes tell you their perspective on this thing that you've created. And so it can be about, I think, the burden of creation and wondering why you create, and the feeling that you're kind of alone and that it's kind of isolating you. So it's a game that I think, you know, from its face, from the surface, it's a coloring book and it's kind of cute, but it also gets into some like pretty heavy themes, I think, pretty quickly.
Yeah, and to talk a bit more about the story in relation to that, it's kind of like the title, Chicory, that is kind of this magical character who has this magical paintbrush, who's tasked with, you know, coloring in the world to help the other residents in the world. And at the start of the game, Chicory, who is not your character, is kind of like having this depressive moment and they don't want to color anymore. And your character, who is this dog who you get to name whatever you'd like, finds the paintbrush and kind of gets thrust into this role of having to, you know, fulfill Chicory's duties as like this wielder. And it analogs so well, I think, with kind of a lot of what we've been talking about with creators of like, what do you do when you maybe create something or you experience a lot of response to your work, not expecting it, and kind of dealing with that idea of like, do I deserve this gift? Do I deserve this notoriety or exposure? And like, how do I, you know, navigate the world while my work is being, you know, consumed by others? I thought that was a kind of really interesting way of not only using like the gameplay mechanics, which like Ben said, you know, you're like coloring in the world however you like, it's kind of free form, but also using that to talk about like these bigger ideas around being an artist.
Yeah, it's in some ways I think it's like the perfect interview for us, because it's like, oh, we're having these conversations with creators about like why they create and what they create and what their relationship to that is. I think this is a game that is in a meta way like very concerned with what it means to create and what a relationship to art is from the kind of artist's perspective. It's a very like great kind of interesting, compelling game. And yeah, it was a really fun conversation.
For sure. And I think something that maybe you and I have definitely struggled with is, you know, we always want everything to be perfect. We want it to be the best thing possible. And what does that often lead to? It leads to a lot of unfinished things, right?
You and I, we agonize over shit for just hours at a time. I think we're both the way where it's like, oh, we slotted out an afternoon. Like, cool. That sentence that we write in that afternoon, going to be pretty good.
Yeah, and I think it was really great having Greg and Alexis both there, because they, you know, although they work on the same team, they obviously have different kind of creative ideas of like how you do things. And Greg makes a point to be like, I just like to finish it. Like, I'm not somebody who's going to be tied down by like trying to get everything perfect. And that's why I have other people like Alexis who are going to like come in and be like, well, maybe we should slow down. Maybe we should, you know, spend some more time. And I think at least I'll just speak for myself, it was a good reminder to just be like, hey, sometimes you just need to finish the thing and you can always, you know, spruce it up later.
Yeah, he had that line, I think, about efficiency, and I think after the fact both of us were like, that kind of speaks to us deeply, like, damn, would be nice if we could finish the things we were working on writing.
Yeah, so that's something that I'm definitely taking with me. But yeah, how about we allow Greg and Alexis to speak for themselves? I think this is a really fun conversation and we can't wait to let y'all hear it.
Roll the clip.
Greg Lobanov is a game designer from Philadelphia, currently living in Canada. He is the director of Chicory, A Colorful Tale, and has previously created Wandersong and Coin Crypt, as well as worked on a number of other projects. And Alexis Dean Jones is a storyboarder, illustrator, animator, and character designer originally from Brisbane, Australia, and currently based in Canada. She's worked on projects for the Australia Post, as well as Slap Happy Cartoons, where she worked on Tom and Jerry and The Hollow. Most recently, she worked on Chicory, A Colorful Tale as a character animator and designer. Thanks for joining us, y'all.
Thanks for having us. Yeah, that was a really accurate biography right there.
Awesome. The research is paying off. We wanted to bring you both on to talk about Chicory, A Colorful Tale, and just kind of everything else in relation to your work. And you know, just first off, congrats on releasing the new game. It seems like the praise and reception has been kind of off the charts.
Yeah.
Been nice seeing it get out there and seeing people play it.
Yeah, I feel like it must be even crazier for Alexis because this is her first game. Like, for me, it's like this is the biggest game I've ever released, but it's definitely like it's a step from Wandersong. But for Alexis, I feel like it's a totally different world from what she was doing before, right? Like, first indie game and stuff.
Yeah, very different. A lot more personal than all my other projects to date. a lot longer than all my other projects to date. Just a lot more like one-on-one involvement. Because when I was freelancing, it would be like I would have a lot of creative control usually, but the projects were very, very short, like 1 week to 2 months kind of things. and then when I was working at an animation studio, they're very long projects, but I was kind of just like one little piece of the production pipeline, and so like it was a lot more separated. Like, I would finish my work and then like 6 months to a year later the thing would actually come out. So it felt a lot more disconnected.
Out of curiosity, just since finding out that this is kind of your first games project, Alexis, and it's like kind of that more personal connection to it, I'm curious what that experience has been like in terms of like just seeing such a flood of like reception for the game.
definitely feels good. definitely a little overwhelming at times. It feels. Every sort of little piece of feedback, whether it's negative or positive or somewhere in between, I feel like I take it very seriously, which I know you shouldn't always do, because you're never gonna make something that like everybody is gonna connect with, because everyone has a different experience of life, and but it's been really, really, really nice to see like how much people are like reading into all these little things that we put in there, and like we didn't know if anyone would pick up on all this stuff that we were putting in, because some stuff I feel like is like pretty sort of on the surface of the game, but then a lot of things feel more hidden or more just kind of like
really specific, like
or like sidelined and
Can you maybe just talk about like the gap of release, like the work that you're doing and the release being far enough apart that it's like what is your relationship to the game and maybe how has it changed since that's happened? I know for Phil and I, we both like will write essays and you send those out. Even when a publication picks them up, it'll sometimes be like months and months before they finally come out. And so it's like, by the time it gets published, you're like, do I even feel the same way that I felt about this before? Like, do I even believe the things that I wrote down in this essay? And so like, I don't know, like what is your relationship like to this game? And did it shift kind of between the time of working on it and release?
I mean, that aspect of it is like one of the most annoying parts of the whole process to me. Like, especially with like this game, I think had an especially long gap for me, like compared to other games I've done before, because like this game was the first time where we did localization, and we also like the game launched on a new platform, the PlayStation 5, which like no game had done using our game engine before. So like there were so many complications. Like there was a point where like most of my work had to be done. That was in like October of last year. That's when like the story had to be wrapped and like feature complete and everything.
Yeah, that was like particularly because we were doing translations, so we had to like,
yeah, like localization started then.
Can't write anymore because these people have to translate the whole script.
Yeah. So like that's when I felt like done with the game emotionally, and everything since then was just like fixing console bugs, adding features for, you know, controller stuff or like UI stuff, and like fixing localization problems, adding new features to localizers to use, fixing more bugs, and then even more bugs on top of those. And like, yeah, it didn't feel like doing anything creative, so that by the time the game came out, I did feel like pretty over it, so to speak, personally. But then when it came out, I like remembered how cool it was, because like, yeah, everyone was playing it and talking about how dope it was, and like, you know, getting excited about these things that for me I just like forgotten even that there was any like spirit in it, you know, like you work on these animations or really cool story ideas, and then it's years before anyone sees it. So like in the moment you're like, this is so cool, I can't wait to show somebody, and then like a year passes or 2 years pass and it's like, I don't even remember the stuff's in the game anymore.
Yeah, well, all you can think about is like that one thing that you like didn't quite have time to do like as good as you wanted to do.
Right.
It, and you're like,
Yeah, because that's where your head's at in those last months, is just like you're finding all the problems and focusing on trying to like clean them out as best you can. So yeah, like definitely some weirdness there. But then after the game came out, I like remembered, like, oh yeah, this game's dope and people love it and that's great. And it's like a fun thing that people can enjoy and not just like a task list of bugs and problems that I have to like get through.
Yeah. I was kind of working on the game like up until the last minute. Which was like, yeah, not like the night before release, but like a couple of weeks before release, I was still putting animations into the game.
Yeah.
Pretty close to the night before release.
Pretty close, yeah. A lot closer than you generally want to be putting stuff into a game.
Yeah, we got complaints from the porting team. On that.
Yeah, but yeah, it was just animation, so it wasn't like new features or anything like that. But
yeah,
But yeah, everything has like a potential to, like whenever you're writing new stuff, to a game, it's got a potential to
make problems.
Yeah, make problems. So, yeah, I was working probably closer than I should have been to the date, but yeah, similar to what Greg's saying, just like, yeah, you forget like like 90-95% of the game, and you're just like laser focused, and yeah, it's nice to kind of open up your view again and get to see people experience it as an entire thing.
Yeah.
Are you two, like, I don't know if this is similar, if I'm using like writing as an analog, you know, when I publish an essay or whatever, or listen, you know, when we publish an episode of the podcast, it's very rare that once it's out, I'll listen to it all again or like read through the essay again.
Right.
I'm curious, like with something like games where you're, you know, having to like play test a lot of the experience and make sure that things are like working correctly and everything, after the game has come out, are y'all like, that's done, I'm out, or do you actually go back and play it again?
We didn't go back and play it again, but for a game like I don't know, like how, like this game is I think a bit special in that it's really about the player's creativity, So, like, when we were working on it, like, if anything, the frustration was that, like, oh, this game's done and nobody's playing it. Like, there's so many, we worked so hard for years on all these tools and all these little hidden details and things for people to find, and no one's finding them or playing them or using these tools or drawing anything. And, like, that's what's frustrating, is, like, I just want to see someone, like, actually use the stuff we did, right? So, like, going and, like, watching streamers play through the game, like, that was, like, the reason to be excited for when the game came out, for me, anyway, and probably for Alexis, too. Like, we spent the first few days 24/7, just, we had live streams up, and we were just watching people play it, like, over and over, like, the same parts over and over again. It didn't matter, because everyone's playthrough is different, and people react to it differently.
We would, like, look at the thing and be like, okay, there's this many people, and this person's up to this bit. Oh, this bit's really good. We should, like, watch this bit. I haven't seen someone do this bit yet.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, it was, I had, like, it was really, really cool watching people stream, but I had, like, sort of weird mixed feelings about watching people stream sometimes, because, like, every now and then, like, especially when the game is getting to, like, the later stuff that I feel like a lot of people have, like, really personal reactions to, I kind of felt weird watching someone stream that part once and feeling like, oh, I feel like you'd have a better experience of this if you weren't, like having to interact with your chat at the same time.
Right.
You could just be in the moment more. but I guess a lot of streamers kind of do that all the time, and that's hopefully they enjoy that. Hopefully they enjoy experiencing games that way.
Yeah.
I hadn't even thought that is, yeah, of course that's an option, like being able to actually pull up streams of the game and be like, feels like it's equivalent to like when you recommend a movie to someone, you're like sitting on the couch and like watching their every reaction. You're like,
yeah,
what
yeah.
about that? But that part was good, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But you're actually sitting through and able to kind of like watch the stream. It's really interesting.
Yeah, it's really, really fun. Yeah, but it is different. It's not really, it doesn't really feel like, like, I'm not even watching the game itself, almost, right? Or it's like, I'm not, it's not like I'm like, ooh, like, look how funny that Joker it was. It's really like, we're just, we're watching the person's, like, reactions and watching how much fun they're having and, like, what stuff they make, you know, and laughing at the stuff that they add to the game, because that's, like, where so much of this game's, I feel like, life comes in, is when, you know, the game just gives you a blank canvas and they're like, hey, draw something in this, you know, in this style or whatever, and seeing what people do with that. Like, that's the fun part for me, right? Seeing, like, Yeah. So much as, the format is like, it's almost like the game is almost like a setup, and then we let the player is the one who actually makes the punchline for a lot of it. So, like, that's what we're watching for.
You know, I'm glad to hear that, especially this kind of idea of like being a voyeur, watching people experience these like kind of like pretty emotionally resonant moments. And, you know, speaking to this idea of like you're kind of watching people's creativity play out on the screen, you know, two themes that really stuck out to me in the game were, I think something that anybody that makes any kind of art or, you know, any kind of creative thing can relate to, and that's, you know, imposter syndrome and self-doubt, and like especially in the wake of like social media where you share things and like sometimes you get a lot of exposure and sometimes you don't, and kind of navigating those emotions. I'm curious, like, you know, for the listeners, you know, Chicory is kind of like a Zelda-like adventure game with a heavy bent towards the player creativity and exploration, and there's all these side quests and different characters. But baked within that is this kind of this emotional journey of like self-discovery. And I'm curious how you all kind of came to that idea or like those mechanics as you were making the game, and maybe why you wanted to focus in on those ideas.
Right. That is a big question. The little like starting seed for this game was the paintbrush mechanics. Like I even smaller than that. Like I knew there really was just like question of, can you make a game where the player is drawing all the time as like their main interaction with everything? And there were like a lot of little attempts and prototypes at things kind of around that. Before I kind of figured out, like, the top-down Zelda perspective was like a huge, like, eye-opening moment where I realized that this game was actually going to work, where before then I've been trying stuff like platformers and puzzle game stuff, and it was not clicking together at all. Like, But once we kind of figured out the Zelda thing, because the cool thing about the Zelda style, like or like view, is that the entire screen is a thing to draw on, and like, you know, the puzzles come from the way things react to the paint. Whereas in like other genres, like for example, one thing we tried was like a platformer where you were drawing the platform to the person to jump on, and then it's like, how do you make a really hard like puzzle with that? Well, I guess you make areas where they can't draw platforms, or you make it so they only have so much ink, and then they're not thinking about drawing anymore. They're like solving puzzles with drawings and like whatever, right? Whereas this game, like, the thing
You
was
have
always,
people end up using like doing like the same thing
yeah, right,
over
you
and
find
over,
one way to
like
do something, do
way
it
less
over again.
expression.
But yeah, we want people to actually like to draw, like make pretty pictures, and like, yeah. And it was really hard, like, so a lot of decisions in this game kind of came from trying to make people do things that way. Like, we've been going through some of our notes from early on recently, because we're putting together kind of an art book for Kickstarter backers, and I kind of like forgot about ideas and things you're trying. But like, even like the story premise was actually a really hard thing to figure out, because we wanted a story about making art and drawings, and it was really hard to come up with like a conflict or a world where that made any kind of sense, because so many ideas we tried were like for example, oh, it's a world where all the bridges and to connect all the areas got knocked down, and your paintbrush like fills, like, you know, reconnects the areas or something, which sounds really cool, totally be a great game. But then it's like, you're not making drawings, you're just like filling in bridges to connect places, right? It doesn't matter what you draw, and when people have problems, their problems are these bridges. They're not, whereas in this game, right, and you know, the aim was like, everyone you talk to, the thing they want you to do is to draw a picture, right? And like, the problem they have is that there's no pictures drawn right now, or their house isn't colored in, or this canvas doesn't have art in it or something. So we were trying to figure out, like, everything came back to that. It was like, how do we make that like the problem the player is solving, and like make them have to draw and have fun basically doing
So
that.
it sounds like it was almost a Death Stranding game to start with, where you're thinking about bridges and creating bridges between different spaces.
Something like that. I mean, we were trying anything, right? Like we almost
Yeah, like
we're yeah.
the whole the concept is kind of like, yeah, we weren't thinking about Okami at the time, but I feel like that's what, like, I really enjoyed Okami, but like the drawing is definitely not like, it's not really like an artistic thing in that game. It's just like you use this tool and you like fill this river in, or you fill this bridge in, or you fill this wall in, and it's like poof and it's repaired, or you like draw a circle around a tree and the tree blooms, and
Yeah.
it's like just like the way of using this like power that the character has, but it's not like,
Yeah.
yeah, you're not gonna sit there and like do a graffiti on a wall or anything like that.
Yeah, there's been a lot of games that have art as like a main mechanic in them, but yeah, I've just never played one where the player actually has fun drawing as like the thing they mainly do. And that was the thing that we were, and I was just trying to figure it out. And I was like, if I can't figure out a way to do that, then I'm not making this game. But the point is, like, if I can find a way to make that the cool fun part that I think people actually do, like, that's the game I wanted to try to make. And it was really hard.
Yeah. And I think it allows it to get at this question so well of like, what does it mean to be able to create, and to be able to create and kind of influence the world around you? And I feel like, you know, one of the questions that the game poses is like, what does it mean when there's only one person who gets to have that power to kind of create and shape the world, both in terms of like the burden that it puts on them when everyone around them has different ideas about like what they should be doing, but also on like, you know, you're kind of having the sole control over how someone's house looks. And so I'm wondering how you think about, I guess, that question for yourself, and like, what is the role of kind of art and creation in your life, and how you think about both art and creation and kind of access to art and creation.
That's another really big question.
Yeah,
Sorry.
but yeah, you're totally right that like once we kind of had that, once we knew like what we wanted the game to feel like, that like completely informed like what it ended up being about. And yeah, like once we had the idea of like this brush that draws on the world, we thought like, okay, well, who uses it? Is there just one? I guess there is just one. And like, what does that mean? And like the world kind of grew from that main idea, and then like the characters and their experiences grew from that idea as well. Like what, yeah, exactly, like what would that mean for somebody, and like what would that mean for this like multi-generational thing of the wielder.
Yeah. I mean, yeah,
What does that, what would that do to a person like
Yeah.
and the society, and yeah.
I mean, I feel like it's like everyone who works in this game, like we create stuff as like that's like our mode of living basically. So I feel like it was kind of cool and good that the premise of the game kind of gave us a good groundwork to then kind of just talk about our own experiences, you know, like what our takes were on all this stuff, because the game was just so about that. And I found it really hard not to, like, you know, like just you know, even based on the premise, right, like how Alex is talking about, like, you're a dog who winds up with this magic paintbrush that can color the world in, and like you have this hero who's like the famous artist, but you're not them, you're their janitor. Like, there's just so much like drama already built into that premise that we just felt impossible not to talk about or touch on or kind of like dig into. And obviously we all have our own, like, nothing in this game is one-to-one with anything, you know, that we've experienced per se, but like, you know, everything in this game is definitely informed by our, you know, our experience of that stuff. And I was like really excited actually to get to even tell this kind of story, because yeah, like, I am obsessed with making stuff. I think it's the coolest thing in the world. Like, it's totally just what I want to do 24/7, and it's the way I relate to most people, like, in my life. You know, like, all my friends are like creative types or artists, and all we really just talk about is like, what are you working on? Like, what's your problems right now? Like, what are you stuck on? What are you doing next? Kind of thing. And so it just felt like this was a way for me, at least, get to have that kind of conversation, like, through the game itself, you know, to kind of talk to a player about that stuff and you know, just be myself. Like, and that's why, like, we were saying, it was like surprising, I guess, in some ways how much people related to stuff that felt so specific in this game, because a lot of it is like really specific, you know, like it's really like it's so almost autobiographical how much it's about just us and our feelings about, you know, like making stuff, I guess. I don't know. Alexis is rolling her eyes a little bit, but
I was rolling my eyes. I was just, yeah.
Nothing is one to one.
Yeah.
Nothing is one to one, but it's different than like telling a story about like a bard in a magical land, which was like my last game, right? Like, sure. This one feels way more close and like literal, you know, and like, you know, there are definitely lines in this game that I feel like were just plucked straight out of like, you know, like a real life conversation or something that I've had before, you know, that kind of thing, which I haven't had in a game before because, yeah.
and there were a lot of conversations in this game that we would just like go back over and over and over and over and over again, and then like every time we would play test it with somebody, like grill them about like how it hit them, like, yeah, just trying to like yeah, we would obviously like start out like writing something that felt right for us, and then like, yeah, try to make sure that it like was having the same impact for like our playtesters.
Yeah, that connection with Greg, you were talking about like in a game where kind of the main mechanic is allowing the player to kind of create whatever they want, or like they have a blank canvas and they can create whatever they want. Like, how do you figure out what the friction is or what the conflict is? I feel like I really empathize with like what y'all are saying. I was like, and maybe this is just because, you know, I'm an artist myself and I'm like always kind of anxious about how others are going to respond to my work. But one thing that I really appreciated that the game did, I don't know if this was intentional or not, is just like the fact of, you know, you walk into like one of the stores and they have you make a t-shirt design, or you know, you do a canvas, or you go to the art class and, you know, you do a drawing, and then you hear the responses from the other students or the other residents. I found it like a really interesting kind of maybe internal conflict of like, oh, I hope that they're gonna like it, or I hope that the characters are gonna say something nice. And then I don't know, I guess I'm just kidding. I found that those aspects of the game were just such a joy to experience. And I don't think I've really experienced that much in games otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, that stuff was really, like, fun to do, honestly. the characters, so Alexis did all the character designs, and, like, that, like, was a huge influence on their personalities. And in a way, you know, it kind of felt like, yeah, just thinking about like how all these different kind of personalities would interact and feel about like the art that you did, and just kind of riffing on that feeling, I guess. In some ways, like I I don't think it was a missed opportunity, but sometimes I just like wonder, like we had, it was hard. Like there were actually a lot about this that was really hard, like how much we could do, because for example, something I was always thinking about was like, okay, what if a little kid is playing this game, right? Or even actually another way to frame this is like, whenever you do any drawing in the game, we have no way to know how you feel about what you just drew, right? Like we don't know if you spent 5 hours in this drawing, and like, you know, it's your best work you've ever done, or if you just drew a butt and are laughing about it, like,
or if you just submitted a blank canvas,
or if you just submitted a blank drawing. I mean, like, we could check, you know, like there's, you know, like technically, like algorithmically, whatever, we could check for some of this stuff, but on some level, like, we don't really know how you feel about it, like, and that makes it really hard with all this stuff. Like the fact that you enjoyed the character, like, interactions or like responses, like that's, you know, I'm really proud of that. Because like when we were doing all this stuff, it felt like such an uphill battle to like find just the right way to do this stuff where, you know, whether you liked what you did or not, it felt like the game kind of respected that or like gave you space to feel however you felt about it, you know, like didn't tell you how to feel about it. And that was just like constantly difficult. and trying to make it like, yeah, feel like landed and feel genuine and stuff too, right? Because we wanted to feel genuine. Like we didn't want players to feel like, you know, like we're just saying stuff, right? Like we wanted to feel like it's a valid reaction to something that you did.
That's an experience I feel like that's an experience that I've had at least a lot, like posting art online. Like no matter how I feel about something, like there's gonna be a whole range of ways that other people feel about it. Like, yeah, even if like sometimes you'll share something that you feel that you've like spent a long time on and feel like really really good about and just kind of and just get like a lukewarm reaction or you'll share something that you did in like 10 minutes and people really really enjoy it and really connect with it.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, surprising how real it is, right? For the at the end of the day, for the reactions the characters have to have nothing to do with what your work actually is in some ways. It's like, yeah. That's my experience too with releasing games. Like, yeah, I've released so many games at so many different scales and there's no correlation between how much effort I put in and what people's reaction is. So
Huh. And Alexis, you mentioned something interesting before, which is like kind of playtesting the dialogue to try to get, you know, feel like you're trying to create a certain reaction in terms of like how the conversations are going or how people are responding to art. And I'm wondering what that feels like to me, very much a microcosm of like what we're talking about here, which is like creating something and also like trying to, you know, be aware of like what the response of it to it is going to be. And so like, yeah, like what is that process like as you're like creating something, trying to like gauge what the response will be, and then also, you know, circling it back into this broader piece that feels like in a lot of ways it is about you know, creation and people's responses to that.
Yeah, I mean, the stuff that we were kind of putting the most attention towards were the really, like, more intense emotional conversations in the game.
Especially everything to do with, like, degrees, issues with depression, and, like, obviously, like, pieces.
Imposter syndrome, and,
yeah. I would say the number one, like, hugest fear that I had like throughout the process of the game, and the number one thing that I kept like coming back to was like I do not want anyone to play this game and think that what we're saying is that like struggling with depression makes you a bad person or makes you a person who is incapable of doing things, which is potentially a read that you could get from like earlier parts of the game. I feel like it's something that is gone into a lot more deeply and more granularly like later in the game. But
it's also just the kind of thing where like whenever you leave space for interpretation, like when you're talking about something that's so personal, like that you know people are going to play this game and relate to it. So whenever you leave, you have something that people are connecting to, but you're also leaving stuff open for interpretation. Like you're giving them room to insert like a read out of it that like is not what you intended. I feel like you probably both deal with that a lot, just with writing in general, right? and that's still the online experience. And like, you know, it's like one, it's one thing if like we tell a joke, it doesn't land with people, like whatever, I don't care about that so much. But when you're playing with people's like hearts and feelings, you know, like you don't want to fuck that up. Like, I don't want someone who's struggling with depression to play this game and then, you know, like feel like done dirty or feel like the game is telling them that they're a bad person.
Or even that we didn't want to give the impression that like, that like these characters had these issues and they all got completely resolved by the end of the game and now everyone's fine. Like that was also not what we wanted to say.
There's a million ways that you could read it that we wouldn't want people to. So it was a lot of work just trying to make sure basically that like for people who had a personal connection with that stuff that it was that like, you know, you'd basically ask them like, hey, like how did you feel about that? What did this mean to you? Like how do you feel about this character? And making sure that, you know, it's not about making sure they like it, but at least making sure that like their takeaway is what we want it to be, right? you don't have to like Chikori as a person, but at least like you understand like why she is the way she is or something, right? Kind of thing. Yeah.
And it's never gonna like mirror anybody's experience like one to one, obviously. But it shouldn't really, because Chikori's her own person. everyone's got a different experience, but like I feel like there's like things that will feel more genuine if you like put more specific stuff in there,
right,
than just kind of like vaguely talking about it in a way that doesn't feel like personal.
It's not like it's a game about like mental illness. It's a game about like these specific people and like their really specific flavor of like problem they're having. And that's like a huge part of it. But also, of course, the potential problem. Like if we screwed it up. So that's why we put so much attention to that stuff. Obviously everything in the game we hoped people would like. Too, right? So there was effort in everything to make sure it was like up to a level of quality, but I think like there's nothing else I really felt a worry about. Like with a lot of it, it's like it feels like almost improv, like you're kind of playing along and telling jokes and doing fun stuff and giving the player things to do, and it's like something might land, something might not land, that's okay. But the mental health stuff is like where it's not okay if it doesn't land.
Yeah, I mean, kind of. Well, two things. I think the first, I just want to say that, mechanically, it's interesting hearing about like the genesis of coming up with the mechanics of like play in relation to painting and everything. And another like kind of really small thing I was talking to Ben about the game that I really loved was even all the way down to little things like the help function of like you call your mom and she kind of gives you a little bit of. And a hint of like what you need to do next, and little stuff like that I found like so great in terms of like character building moments, because you know you call and it's like a conversation with your parent, and then you see like the dad's hand kind of coming in, and it functions right as on this twofold front of like you get a little bit of a character beat, but then it's also like, okay, here's literally what you need to do. And this works so much better than I think in some other implementations that kind of take you out of the experience and then kind of tell you what you need to know and then put you back in.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we were always looking for stuff like that. In general, like being genuine and trying to tell something that felt honest to the characters is like always our number one priority, I feel like, with any of this stuff we do. The parent and phone call thing was like, I feel like such a almost like lucky break. Like there are a lot of things we wanted to do, and like I was like trying to think of ways to do them, and that one kind of thing in the game kind of solved so many problems at the same time. It was just like, yeah, great. Great how well it worked. I'm really happy with that too. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Speaking of not getting the wrong reads out of the game, I wanted to ask about, you know, Phil and I have kind of been interested in like political messaging in games, and I'm wondering, you know, it felt to me like there is a pretty clear political message to this game, but I'm going to run it past you.
Okay.
You know, it feels like this idea of this brush
as almost a divine right, passing from, you know, one individual to the next generation to generation. And then at the end, obviously, you know, that is in a way democratized and everybody has the option of getting their own brush to create and paint, possibly. I'm wondering if that is, you know, is that something that was intentional or something that kind of came out, you know, over the course of production?
We had, like, I think, like, shifting ideas on how the game was going to end for a while, but probably about halfway through development, we kind of figured out what the ending was actually going to be.
I think it definitely says something about, like, how we feel about art, for sure.
Yeah, because that's the thing we were looking for along the way, right? When we were trying to figure out what ending was going to feel right. Like, the reason why we didn't go with, I don't even remember how else the game was going to end, but, like, it was always a matter of, like, you know, we wanted... however the game ends, it's like people are always going to remember that as that's what the game is about or that's what it says. So it's super critical that, like, whatever you do for that, like, it's something that you really, you know, believe in, that you are, like, willing to stand by, basically, because...
Yeah, it flavors how the entire rest of the game feels.
Yeah, and it was important to figure out before we got too far into it, too, because... Yeah, like if you just wander with directionlessly and then you get and you're like, well, I guess the game just ends there. Like, that, you can leave people with a horrible taste in their mouth.
Yeah.
So, like, in a sense, yeah, I guess it was intentional. I mean, it's, like, absolutely consistent with what I think we sort of believe in as artists and, like, how, you know, like, it kind of was like, you know, by the time you get there, it does feel like this is the only way the game really could end. at least that's how it felt to us, so... Yeah,
and even it's like I feel like mechanically what's interesting and smart is that it feels like it's there from the beginning. I'm someone who is very, very bad at art, but I feel like the game is inviting you to do painting from the drop. And so it feels like that end conclusion feels like it's almost seated in that, like, from the drop, you're learning how to create and you're learning how to paint within this space. Which, like, I think coming in as someone who is, like, very not comfortable painting, I feel like I'm very bad at that stuff. It felt like it was, like, echoing the kind of message or the ending of that game in some ways.
That's cool. Yeah, no, I'm totally glad you got that takeaway from it. I do remember now, like one other, because this is something we were going through notes. There was something, like, there was a point, like, in our very first document where I was like, for the end of the game, maybe there's, like, everyone gets a brush, or maybe it should be, like, the main character is, like, a super good, powerful wielder or something, and it's, like, more about their realization of, like, their individuality or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was very different.
Super, yeah, it's super different, right? Like, yeah. But yeah, I mean, I am really happy the way we did with it, because again, yeah, it just totally feels like it's what the game should be about. Yeah, and there's always, like, the dance of, like, what you know, you feel like you can kind of, I don't know, convince people of that, to make them feel genuine with, because, like, yeah, I honestly, like, there was a constant struggle in this game with the player character who you play as, like, their internal struggle. Because, yeah, like, so they're dealing with imposter syndrome, but it exists in this really weird layer where, like, you're playing as a person who has imposter syndrome. So, like, for example, something that we, like, really felt like, you know, should have been in this story but isn't, is a time when, like, your player character draws something and they're like, oh, I don't like this drawing I just did, you know? Like, I don't feel so good about that. Like, totally feels like something that, like, would make sense for the character to do, but we could never do that, ever, because we don't know what you just drew. We don't know how you feel about it. Like, no matter how we frame it, we just don't know, like, what you were feeling going into it, right? So, like, by that same way, right, like, making the ending of the game really focused on, like, their confidence, or, like, they make something that's, like, impressive or special or something, it's like, we just can't do that, because we can't know. Maybe at the end of the game you feel like you're worse at drawing than when you started, right? Like, we just don't know. So it couldn't be about that, and it's, like, instead completely about, like, the stuff outside of that, right? Like, not even about the drawings themselves, but about, like, how you feel about your drawings, or, like, how you really feel about yourself, not even connected to the art that you're doing, right? But it's such a weird line to toe, and it makes stuff hard, because, yeah, we were trying to thread that needle and try to find that, like, that tone that, like, feels genuine, is genuine, is honest, but, like, yeah, connects to your experience, and, yeah, anyway, it's complicated.
Well, you know, kind of continuing on in that realm, I'm curious, like, Alexis, as you were developing the different characters and everything for the game, I mean, it seems like it would be a really challenging game in particular because it's a game about, you know, player creativity and, like, allowing that agency of the player to find their own voice or whatnot with their art. While also, I mean, Chicory, the game, has a very distinct art style. I'm curious, like, what that was like for you, kind of developing the characters and thinking about, you know, how they would look and all, and everything involved with that.
I'm thinking about, like, yeah, when I was, yeah, first, I took a lot of inspiration from, like, Madeline's background art, Madeline Berger, who did the, yeah, all the environment art. Yeah, if I was feeling kind of like, sorry, I'm talking. Yeah, if I was, like, feeling a little bit directionless about a character, I could always, like, go and look at their stuff and see how their, like, line work looked and, like, yeah, take inspiration from that to get started on a design to make somebody who, like, felt like they fit in the world. Yeah, I don't know. I felt like I had a lot of freedom designing characters in this game.
Yeah, I think
I could kind of just think about somebody who would be fun to design and then, like, yeah, either chat with Greg or, like, look at the big list of like, kind of character profiles that Greg wanted to put in the game. And, yeah, I would always have, like, something interesting to start off with.
I think we did a pretty good job at establishing, like, the boundaries early on. So, like, when we were in the early prototype phase, like, we didn't even know the game was going to be black and white at first. And then, yeah, Madeline came on to do the environment stuff. And Madeline's background was in, like, zines and comics and stuff. Their artwork is, like, super cool. And it looks exactly like how this game looks. Like, this game is basically just, like, a zine.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But, yeah, so, like, their background wasn't in games, and I wanted to work with them because I thought their art was so cool. Alexis was an amazing character designer who I also wanted to work with to do, like, all these animal characters and stuff. But basically, like, we decided, you know, black and white world, like, here's kind of what the backgrounds look like, and Alexis is going to draw, like, you know, characters with black line art and empty white areas the player can color in, and they're, like, about this big, and, you know, like, whatever, right? And that's it. And then everything else, it's, like, once you know what your rules are, like, what you're allowed to do, then it's, like, you feel like you can do anything inside that box, and that's, like, the fun. That's when it gets really fun. So I feel like there wasn't, I mean, it's nice when you can find that stuff, right? Because it wasn't like we were constantly coming up with into friction, like, oh, we can't do this because whatever. Or I guess you were in little ways, right, Alexis, with, like, the way the characters layer and stuff, like, and then little, yeah. Like, just a lot of, yeah.
in little ways, it was pretty early on that we playtested, and somebody was like, originally you could only color the characters in one color, one of our playtesters was like, I really, really, really want to color, like, the person and the clothing different colors, and we were like, yeah, all right, that seems doable.
actually, we were like, I was like, that seems impossible, we should never do that.
And I was like, who has never made a game before? I was like, yeah, that seems fine, why not? Yeah, whatever. That was basically my response to anything that anybody would be like, let's put this in the game, and I'd be like, yeah, let's do it. And yeah. Greg would be like,
This is the constant.
Let's think,
like,
about it first.
Yeah, this is definitely. I am actually really grateful that Alexis was on the project to, like, add that, like, color to it, because, yeah, like, I mean, because of my experience, I'm like, to a fault, like, you know, always focused on efficiency and, you know, focusing on what is, like, really
Greg likes
possible.
To finish things.
I like to finish things. Yeah,
I usually do.
Can't relate. I don't know what that's like.
Yeah, and especially I think coming from an animation background where. Like, when you're working on an animation, like a TV animation kind of thing, right? Like, you set your camera up a certain way, you make your drawings, and you know the player's going to see it the same way every time. Sorry, the viewer's going to see it the same way every time, right? And it's like, all the time you spend putting in details, like, appears on the screen in some way. But with games, it's like, you know, something that seems, and this is, you know, something that seems like such a simple feature, like, ooh, make every character have two color areas on them. It's super complicated because it, like, multiplies against every other system in the game and can add, like, so many more, like, parts to everything. And I remember
at
the time,
way that I was, like,
yeah,
because of the way that I was delivering the characters to Greg, like, I was animating them in Flash and then exporting PNG sequences to send to him. And so like every different layer had to be sent as a different sequence of PNGs. That meant that I had to be really careful in how I was designing the characters so that I didn't have like, because like we wanted to limit it to like a certain number of layers per character so that I wouldn't be sending him like 200 PNGs for this one character.
Yeah.
And so it meant I could only I had to like make sure I didn't have a character where there was like clothes and then body and then clothes and then body and then clothes.
Yeah.
Which is really easy to do if you're not thinking about it very carefully while you're doing it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and just like being very, very careful about like the amount of detail. So I'd be drawing them like zoomed in quite far, and like I usually put a fair amount of detail on characters, but because they're so tiny in the actual game, that like yeah, I had to force myself to like stay zoomed out when I was doing the final pass of any design to like go like that's too many buttons. You can't like see all those buttons from this far away or like things like that.
The rules didn't change, thankfully. Like once we knew what the rules were, at least they were always the same. And it was always kind of the same problem that we were having to solve with like, how do you make this character into just two layers? Like but it was fine.
But I definitely loved like, I love putting like little sort of like hidden things in the game. Like some of my favorite animations are things that like hardly anybody is gonna see. like the clothing swap people. There's like the lizard guy who runs the clothing swap, and then there's this Pine Martin who runs and gets the clothes. And if you ask them to run and get clothes, then they come back and they're tired. And then if you ask them again to run and get clothes without leaving the shop, they come back and they're even more tired. And then you ask them again and they come back and they're even more tired. And that's like, so they've got like 5 different animations.
Yeah,
and those were really, really, really fun to do, and bring me a lot of happiness, even though, or maybe because I know that like not everyone's gonna see them.
Yeah.
So it feels more special when somebody does see them.
That's funny. I mean, I feel like when I'm playing games, I'm somebody who, you know, story is definitely like the biggest thing I care about. But oftentimes, in the same token, you know, we were talking to Brooke Maggs, who is a narrative designer at Remedy Entertainment and worked on Control. And we were talking about like how in Control, you know, you can go and do all these side quests and talk to the characters numerous times and hear all these different dialogue options. And, you know, despite the fact that I'm a writer and I love story, I'm definitely like a player I listen to the main dialogue and then like I'm never clicking the extra dialogue again. But in Chicory, it's funny. It was the complete opposite. Like I would like sit and I just talk to the characters like all the way through. And I think it was because like early on there was like some character who, I think that's when you're making the donut or like the t-shirt, who's like, oh, you know, these kids, they don't have time to talk to anybody. And I was like, fuck you, I got time. So I ended up just talking to him, and though there's nothing left, I loved those little bits.
Thanks. Yeah, we cared a lot about making sure that every character kind of had like their own personality and stuff. That's another thing where like I feel like with a lot of other like kind of RPG games like this, you know, you would draw like 10 different people and then just like have them show up everywhere and just, you know, give them a different name or something, right? But we made every single person have their own name and their own art, completely unique animations and stuff, and that was just like, that's the kind of thing that I do really love doing, because I do think it adds a lot to the game, but it is also just like tons of work. But I think that's part of what makes that's like stuff enjoyable, is like they're, you know, every person does have something unique to say, and like, you know, you're not gonna find that anywhere else. And we also like make a very strong point of not repeating anything. Like if someone's out of new text, then you can't interact with them anymore. There's just no prompt. So, you know, anytime you see someone you can interact with, you know that you're going to see something new if you do. And I think that's, like, a really valuable, like, piece of knowledge for a player to just, like, have, right? Because then, like, yeah, every character you see, every prompt that comes up to talk to somebody, you just know is, like, oh, my God, like, I could see that. And even the decision not to see that still is interesting, because you know that, like, you chose not to look at something that you could have that was going to be unique or something, right? Like, it always adds to that. I don't know. Yeah.
I have kind of a more general question, which is like, I wonder what for both of you your relationship to like your art and your creation is when it is also your job. I know for me, I feel like it shifts a lot when it's something that I'm doing as a job, and it starts to feel like work, and it starts to feel maybe less creative in some ways. And so, you know, what is your relationship with the things that you create when they are also the things that are your, you know, employment?
You should answer that, Alexis.
Okay, first. Yeah, it really, really depends on what the job is. A lot of the early stuff that I did, like after I, like when I first started working in animation, I would get emotionally involved in like the first part of the process. I did a lot of jobs that were like I would be doing like almost the entire thing. I wouldn't do the script, but I would be doing like character designs and storyboards and animatic and like background illustration and animation and editing and everything. not sound, but everything else. And I would just like, I don't know, I would find parts of the project that I like no matter what the project was, even if it was something that I had like no interest in whatsoever. some very corporate stuff and like health and safety videos. Sometimes those were cool. There's some pretty fun ones that were about in classroom sort of videos for kids and stuff. There was some cool stuff, but yeah, there would always be something about the project that I could dig into and either learn something or draw on some experience or some like interest that I had. And it wouldn't always be like the entire project, but like I would either like really, really have fun doing the design or doing the animatic or like figure out some new way to animate. Okay. And make it interesting that way. Yeah. And I think I'm grateful to all of my early projects that I was able to do that. I think that happened just because they were tiny, tiny projects and so I could have a fair amount of creative control. Occasionally there'd be a project where it was just really just get it done, and I didn't like it didn't really feel like a creative thing. And when I'm working on things like that, I will do a lot more art outside of work, and use skills that I have during the day and then make something outside of work. Chikuyu's interesting. Because I was really, really, really invested in it. I am really, really invested in it. And I think it was a lot more, I don't know, it was a lot more stressful and it felt like a lot higher pressure because of that. Because I felt like I really had to be like on, like for both like skills and creativity all the time. Yeah, it felt like a kind of sometimes it felt like it was like the easiest project I ever had if things were flowing, and sometimes it felt like the hardest project I ever had if I felt like I needed to get something like to a level that I didn't think it was at, especially if I just like had to move on from it. like there's a couple of designs that I'm just like not entirely happy with, and those are just like little sort of thorns in my side, and I'm sure nobody could even like if I asked somebody to guess which characters they are, I'm sure they wouldn't be able to guess.
Yeah, they're gonna say they're great. That's their my favorite character.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they really do. Yeah.
But it was also like incredible to be able to work on, to get the opportunity to work on something that I could like pour so much into and feel so passionate about.
Totally. And I really like what you're saying about, because I feel like it's so true when there's like the office-y aspects of the things that you're doing. Mm. it's very easy, I think, there when it's like when you get critiques at work or whatever, you're like, all right, whatever, like that's not a thing I care very deeply about in the same way. But when it's the kind of creative side of you that you like, I think, feel more invested in, and then you're doing it as a work and then it gets some feedback, it's like it's hard not to be like, oh, whoa, this feels like it's speaking to who I am as a person in a way that's like harder to grapple with in some ways. Mm-hmm.
And even the office-y stuff, like I don't know, like when I started working at Sub Happy, that was like the first time that I'd ever had like a director, like an art director who was like, for Tom and Jerry, for instance, I was doing board pulls, which is just like episodic designs basically, and that show has like such, that show has an art style, and things need to look exactly how they need to look. And you can tell immediately if something does not look like Tom and Jerry. So it took a little bit to really get into that art style, and doing that was like, it is not the way that I draw naturally, and it felt very weird and wrong sometimes. but it was like fun in a different way. It was fun to learn how to draw in that style, and fun to have an art director who'd be like, oh, actually, like, you need to make this toe like more bubbly. you can't just like mesh these toes together, they gotta be like really separated, and I'd be like, oh, that's weird, but okay, cool.
That's so specific.
A lot of very specific things about that show. The width of a lip,
right?
this is not relevant.
I mean my like relationship to this stuff is really different from Alexis's, I feel like, because I have, my background has always been in making indie games, and where I think Alexis is like really focused on making stuff that's like really good and refined and precise and detailed, I'm way more about just like getting to the end as fast as possible and like learning how to do it faster next time, like. I don't think so much about like flaws and stuff when I'm working on it, which is helpful. I totally had a thing I was gonna say and I blanked on it. My main like development as a creator, like in over the course of the last few games, has been if I look at like my earlier indie games, I was always really like into doing my own thing and trying to do the weirdest, you know, most weird, cool, creative thing that I could think of. But then naturally, like, people who play it just don't usually click with that stuff. They don't really get it, or it's like really hard to make something that like has this weird idea to it that people also understand. And so for me, like, part of that, like, you know, like understanding, okay, so what the reason why this is my job, like what I actually have to do to make this like profitable, is I have to learn how to make something that people actually want to play. And sometimes that means like making a concession or sacrifice on like the weirdness of a game so that it's like something that people can understand. And I've learned actually to love that, to love that part of the process and like really enjoy that part of the process. So like for me, even going from like Wandersong, my previous game, to Chicory, this one, I think I did such a better job at that specifically, where this game is still really weird and it's not like other games, but it does such a better job at kind of meeting players where they're at and giving them something that they can understand and digest and have fun with and like understand like on a genre level, like what they're supposed to do and play. And I just think that's actually great. So kind of like what Alexis is talking about, like once you find like problems to solve, then like that becomes kind of the fun part of the job, is like, you know, there's the unbridled creativity part where you have crazy ideas like a painting world. But then, like, a lot of the actual work I have learned to love is, like, that little problem solving. Like, how do you make a painting game that people actually want to paint in? And, you know, like, what genre of game that people have heard of can I make this format so that people will enjoy playing it? And, like, how do you make a good Zelda game? Like, what does that look like? And that kind of thing. So I've learned to really, really enjoy that part of it a lot. And that kind of makes the job part of it fun. And in some ways, I feel like I'm kind of basic because I really like my job. I like doing what I'm
doing. That's good.
Yeah. And I definitely tend to work like a lot and really hard on it too, which is like something that, you know, it's almost like it's adverse to what even we say in our own game, right? Like, Chicory is so much about, like, you know, when something becomes your job, like, how do you deal with the pressure of that, and how do you learn to accept that you can step away from it when you don't like it anymore? But my personal experience is actually so much more like, I just love doing this stuff so much, and like, I just want to make more games, and I'm already thinking about more games I want to make and ideas for them, and like, yeah. So my relationship with this is really strong, and that's why I really enjoyed making this game in a way too, because like, for me it was, yeah, just getting to talk about all these different ways that people come into doing creative stuff and all these different relationships people can have with creative stuff and just how much fun it is to make stuff. I think that was, for me, like most personally, that was the thing that I really wanted people to kind of get from playing this game, was like how much fun it is to be creative and to make stuff, and like giving people that little boost to, like, you know, really feel like, oh, like I can make stuff too, like, and I can have fun doing this, right? It's not just a thing that, you know, you don't have to be like a genius to do this, you don't have to be like special to do this, you don't even have to be a professional to do this or be good at this to do this, like, you can just have fun doing this thing, and that's just great. That's something that I totally feel like, I don't always feel like I'm the best person at this job or anything, but I really like doing it. So I just wanted to share that with people, I think, more than anything. Yeah.
No, that's dope. I think I'm glad you brought up Wandersong, because I was reading an old interview, and I think something that Ben and I have been talking to a lot of our kind of game industry guests about is like this allure to like interactive experiences, like interactive creation, or in this case, interactive narratives and things like that. And you were talking about Chicory, and you said, overall, the direction of the game, I would say Chicory feels way more like a video game than Wandersong did. Wandersong was very story focused and totally like a linear experience that feels almost closer to like an animation or cartoon or film or something. Mm-hmm. And I think to broaden that for you both, like, what is it maybe for you, Greg, that is so appealing in the medium, like video games? Why is this like the medium of choice for you? And maybe for Alexis, since you're kind of getting into games now more on the design side, what is drawing you in?
Oh man. I mean, like, there's a lot of things you can say about video games that are really cool. I mean, at the end of the day, I think selfishly, I just have fun making them. Like, I think games are really fun to play, and it's really fun thinking of rules for games. Like ever since I was a little like kid, I used to love making like board games and card games and stuff. So like, it's just that particular kind of problem solving and creativity is just really appealing to me. And I like the way, I love how so many other pieces kind of come into it with games. And like, okay, like comparing to other media, for example, like, you know, like comics, obviously there's tons of components because there's storytelling and art, but games have like, you know, music and sound design as part of it. And I love game soundtracks. And if you compare it to something like film, like with film, there are so many different parts to it, totally. But then film is like a medium where to do all those parts usually means like you're bringing in a lot of people, or you're kind of bringing in a lot of expertise that's sort of outside the, like, I don't know, the canvas itself. Like, you're bringing in actors who are performing this stuff, you're dealing with cameras and lighting and shooting locations, and like with games, it's like, it still feels to me like it really is at the end of the day just the art. Like, that's where all the work goes into, and all those specific details of like the way that I get to focus on it, the things that I get to do every day, and the problems that I get to solve are just super, super fun. And I think something that I was going to mention before and forgot to was just how much, like, I focus on process specifically, like making sure that I enjoy the stuff that I'm doing. Like, that's a huge goal for me with every project, like finding something that is really fun to work on. Because if it's not fun to work on, then I should, you know, the thing I always remind myself is like, if I'm not having fun working on this, I could totally just get another job I don't like and make like way more consistent money, right? Like, I could do something where I'm not like literally just gambling with my life savings every time, or like depending on like Steam users to give me good reviews to make, you know, to make a paycheck or something, right? Like, I don't have to do that. The reason I'm doing it is because I have to love the process. So like, making sure that I'm making a process that I do love, that is really fun, and also making sure that everyone who's working on this game is also having a fun process, right? Like, making sure that, like, you know, they're having fun, that they're doing stuff that they enjoy doing, that the game isn't asking them to get into stuff that they don't enjoy either. Like, all that stuff, I think, is just such an important part of why, like, that's like, if you're gonna make an indie game, like, you have to do that, right? Or there's no point. So yeah, I'm totally focused on just having the most fun with the process the whole time, and games are really fun to make, so that's my answer.
And how about, Alexis, for you, like, since you just, this is kind of like your first, like, really big game, just to kind of start off the bat, like, what has that kind of experience been like? Like, what's kind of drawing you in? Do you think you're going to do more games, or is this kind of like, Chicory, I went out on a 10 out of 10, going back to animation?
I just feel like some pressure. It was, I kind of just slid into it without really, like, I didn't really have like a goal of working in games. It kind of just I knew the team, and I loved Wondersong, and and I knew that I really liked Greg's writing, and so when this started happening, it like made so much sense to jump on and be a part of it, and I had a really fantastic time working on it. I think I really do want to work on more games. I guess you're like reading off the stuff that I have done in the past beforehand. I like working on like all sorts of different parts of a project. Like, I really enjoy it, like all the different steps of it. I feel like what I really, really want to do is like work on things that I feel invested in with a team of other people. Like, I know I really like working with other people. working on a game like this, I've been able to work like so closely with like everybody in the team, and be able to talk to Lynn about the music, and talk to him about the sound design, and talk to Madeline about the backgrounds, talk to Greg about the story and the dialogue and stuff. Like, we talked a lot about the dialogue and the story and stuff. And like, I was thinking about this before. it kind of sounds really, really weird and corny, but I don't know, like, working on a game, you're kind of like the people playing the game are kind of part of what it finally becomes as well. So it's kind of like you're working with all these people that you'll never meet as well. Like, they're all gonna like have different interpretations, and that like, that's like a part of what the game is as well. And you get to like, yeah, share it with all these different people. And I think because it's, I think because it's interactive, it like people have like these weird like personal experiences with it that you like could never like know all of. And that's really, really cool and interesting. And being able to kind of like shape this thing and poke it and prod it and like add tiny little things to it, like stuff like sitting on chairs. Like, I like insisted to Greg that we that the main character be able to sit on chairs, because that's just a thing that I love doing in video games. If there's chairs, that I want to be able to sit on them. I don't really know what the analog to that would be in animation. Like, I've thought in the past about making like a short film or something like that, and I've worked on short films with other people, but I don't maybe one day I'll have like a really good idea that I feel like is like important enough to spend like 2 or 3 years animating a short film. I really love working on like other people's ideas and working collaboratively to like come up with something that we all feel passionate about. It feels like a game has like a really good opportunity to do that, to be shaped by a bunch of people, and yeah. Yeah.
This is a good question. I really love what you're saying about, like, to some degree that, like, video games offer a kind of intimacy that is maybe not available in, like, other mediums, because there is that player interaction that is also unique for each player in a way that isn't necessarily true of sitting and watching a movie or sitting and reading a book, where sure, we all have different relationships with a text or a movie, but the movie or the text itself are not like interactive in the same way and are different and changing and shifting in a literal way.
I love
that.
Yeah, I do too. Actually, it reminded me of an experience I had, like, when I'm a really big fan of Steven Universe, and I remembered when the show was ending, there was like the first series at the ending of it, there was like this huge, like, big episode, like, finale thing. I remember at the time, like, there was this, you know, it's like, it's action packed, like, super plot heavy thing where they go and fight this, like, big robot or whatever. And I remember feeling at the time, I was like, oh, it's just too bad that this is such a, like, plot-heavy episode, because all I really wanted was just to spend more time with the characters and just, like, hang out and have, like, one more chat, like, you know, before the big fight. Like, I just want to know, like, how's Garnet feeling right now? Like, what is Amethyst thinking about this or whatever? But there's no time for that because, you know, it really, like, it's in a pace and it's kind of going in its own way. And that's exactly the kind of thing that you can do in a video game and, in fact, are expected to do in a video game as a creator. And I think that part of it's really fun, like, you know, like, giving the player basically the freedom to engage with the weirdest, smallest things and to find the weirdest, smallest things and to spend time on the weirdest, smallest parts that, like, you would never put into a movie or a book or a show, because it would be wasting someone's time to actually, like, make that part of the journey, right? This, like, long conversation with somebody at, like, right before the ending. And yet, if you're in a game, it's, like, so nice to just be able to, like, walk, you know, left from the final boss door and just talk to someone for an extra hour because you want to know how they're feeling right now, you know?
Or and if that's, you just, like, want to go and fight the final boss, then you can do that too.
That's, and you can do that too, yeah. Totally, like, the fact that you can provide that.
That you want.
Yeah, and as a creator who just enjoys, like, filling worlds with detail and, like, getting into characters and stuff, like, I love having that opportunity as a creator. And, yeah, and that's something where, like, yeah, players get to have a really personal relationship with that too.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
No, I love that. I think, you know, writing for me, you know, has often been a fairly solitary experience. It's like something that I kind of do, like, in a quiet place by myself and, you know, whatever. But I think over the years, I'm finding more and more how much I love just collaborating with people on projects, whether it's, like, you know, Ben and I have collaborated on a number of projects in the past, or, you know, other people, or even reflecting on, you know, this podcast, like, it started because of a tweet that I made to a friend who I was like, oh, I want to talk to game developers about, like, their lives. And Ben tweeted at me and was like, dude, we could do that. And then, you know, like, my partner came on and did the art, and then our friend Ryan did the music for the show. And it was one of these things where it's, like, such a pleasant experience where I feel like I'm constantly, like, learning and growing. And, you know, maybe to wrap us up, something, I might be putting y'all on the spot a bit, but I'm curious, like, you know, now that the project largely is wrapped, I'm curious, like, what maybe you two have learned from each other, you know, working on Chicory, whether that's, like, a super technical thing or, like, something maybe personal and kind of low stakes.
I think Alexis has definitely shown me time and time again the value of adding small details and things into the game, and, like, yeah, because, yeah, I totally have a tendency to just, like, have a cool idea and then say no to it just because it seems too hard. And because I am so focused on efficiency and process and having fun with it. But sometimes just, like, pushing a little bit through the annoying stuff to make something that, like, adds that little, like, extra detail and spice, like, is worth it and really fun. And I'm really glad to have her on the project because, like, she always has the coolest ideas for stuff like that. And even if not all of them make it in, like, when they do, it's because they were, like, really freaking good ideas. So I'm still learning that from Alexis, but I feel like that's a big thing for me.
I feel like something that I'm still in the process of learning, but something that Greg definitely reminds me of a lot is just, like, getting things done. Like nothing's ever gonna be perfect, and even if like something that feels like it's, like, 90% for you might feel like 100% for someone else, or something that feels like sometimes I would pour so much time into one thing, I would just go past like that and wouldn't be noticed. And then other times I would do just like one drawing of a character and everyone would love it. So like, yeah, just like trusting, I guess, like trusting myself to be able to kind of like, do a good job on like, yeah, without like stressing and going over something like 10 times to try and get like some impossible, like ideal version of it. Like, yeah, if there's like a, if I make something and I have like a good feeling about it, then like, just like trusting that good feeling and not needing to polish it too much. Yeah. For a number of reasons. Yeah.
I feel that heavy. Yeah. I feel like Ben and I are like definitely the, oh, we need to like polish it one more time before we do it. And yeah, getting that, being okay with like, hey, I'm releasing this thing. Yeah. Greg, give me some of that energy, you know.
we have a mutual friend who writes a ton, and he'll post like, it'll be like every like 3 or 4 months, he'll be like, yes, I have completed preliminary work on my next novel. And I'm like, in that span of time, I've maybe like pored over a paragraph for that space of time. So it's always just like, damn, like give me that good energy.
Right. I think you have to stop caring if it's good or not. I think that might be key.
Good luck. That sounds tough.
Yeah, good luck.
I don't know if that's exactly true.
Yeah, I guess I do care if it's good or not.
Yeah, yeah. And there are definitely things that you like, but you're very good at like, you're very good at doing a first pass and moving on, and then like later you'll come back and sort of re-examine things. But like, because you've gotten so much of the thing done, you're able to see it with a lot more context, and I think like do a much more better informed second pass.
I feel like I always, there's like this urgent gravity I feel from like the, like wanting to see the whole thing come together, like, and like wanting to see people play it. I think that's always what I'm thinking about, is like that end point. And I always have that in mind. So everything I'm doing, I'm always thinking like the shortest route to that part of it. And that sometimes means like, okay, like I'm going to do a shitty version of this part right now. And I know it's a shitty version and I know that I can change it later, but I want to like, just have the scaffolding there to get to the next thing, to get to the ending, to see with the whole thing together so that I can know how to make it all actually good. And then sometimes you realize that all the shitty scaffolding is actually fine and you don't have to change it, and the game comes out next month. So, and that's beautiful, and that's life.
That feels like a great line to end on, honestly. Thank you both so much for taking the time out of your evening, afternoon, and talking to us.
Yeah, thanks for having us. It was great.
Well, that was our conversation with Greg Lobanov and Alexis Dean Jones about Chicory, A Colorful Tale. I think that this was a really great conversation for us to have around finishing things, around not being so precious with our work. Because at the end of the day, when you're able to finish the thing, you can go back and make it better, right? Like, if it's not done at the end of the day, it's just an incomplete thing, right? So I really appreciated that. I don't know what was kind of the big takeaways you were getting, Ben.
You know, I even though I think that you heard that from Greg and Alexis, I think afterwards they also kind of talk about their anxieties around, you know, even after the work is out in the world, like worrying about, you know, people's reactions to it. You heard them kind of talking about like watching streamers of the game and kind of seeing how they were reacting to it. And so it's like, I think that's 100% correct, this idea of like, you have to finish the work. But I also think that like, some of that anxiety is always going to be there around like, creating this thing and still worrying about like, well, how are people going to receive it? And what is the reaction going to be? you know, I don't think the lesson for me is that like, oh, it goes, that feeling is you should just ignore it and it goes away. It's still a part of the process. It's just, you know, at the end of the day, like still got to finish that thing for people to be able to react to it.
Yeah. And just to go off that idea of like responding to others' response of your work, like what you're saying about when they are talking about like, oh, watching people on Twitch play the game or reading reviews of the game. I think that's something that, not to say like Origin Story is like a million listen podcast and we're like dealing with like all this reception or whatever, but like whether it be Origin Story or something where we've written or whatever, I find that I'm still like, it's kind of awkward to respond to others responding to the work, you know, like, and yeah, that's an interesting kind of experience that you'd think would go away the more you do it. But I mean, it hasn't yet.
Yeah. Speaking of, you've got mail.
You've got mail.
I'm going to add just to be clear, in post, this is going to stay in, but in post, I will add the Sleepless in Seattle sound from AOL, the ancient AOL messenger, where it goes, you've got mail. Maybe even a sound effect from Tom Hanks getting up to check his mail.
I wish.
I had a gut feeling you would be online now. Hi.
I don't know if we can clear that.
You don't think that's going to make it through? Okay. All right. All right. But we got some listener email. Long story short. This is from Dylan. Can I say friend of the pod? Is that appropriate?
Friend of the pod.
Friend of the pod, Dylan, who did our art banner, has sent us an email. I'm going to read it to you.
Amazing banner.
Amazing, truly banner. Incredible. Dylan writes, what up? I loved your most recent ep about narrative design with Brooke Maggs, and it reminded me of the deliberate, nonviolent structures of Wandersong, one of my favorite games. Not only does it subvert the writing trope of the chosen one fighting monsters to save the world, but you are never equipped with any way to harm others. You can only sing. And I feel like we should add an addendum that Wandersong is also created by Greg Lobanov, if you didn't catch that. Also the creator of Chicory, who kind of you just listened to that interview. Dylan continues, the game is so cozy and lighthearted while taking huge issues of doubt and the end of the world, but there are so many deliberate choices within its art, gameplay, and music that lead towards a very heartfelt story. It's one of the most honest games that I've played, and I still replay from time to time. I was wondering if either of you had a game that really shocked you with its emotional honesty or its thematic design. What games or stories would you call your comfort media? Best, Dylan. Phil, what's your comfort media?
Damn, that's tough. I feel like I've been thinking about this off and on for a while, and it's hard to come to an exact answer. I think the thing that immediately comes to my mind, which isn't necessarily a video game, so it's kind of a cop-out, is like Magic the Gathering.
Yeah.
You know, I've been playing Magic for over 10 years, and it feels like something that's like just intrinsically a part of me. It's something I can kind of just play and not really think of. But I mean, there isn't much narrative structure in the actual game unless you're like making it up, right? So I don't think that's a great option. It definitely is cozy though.
Totally. I think there's almost like there's two questions there, which is like the thematic one, which is like what's a game that like thematically is very interesting and maybe you come back to, and then comfort media, which is I feel like is a very different conversation about like what's a thing or a game that you're like you feel good coming back to, because I feel like thematically that game that we've both already played, Umurangi Generation, love it. Thematically, I think compelling. I think we've already talked about like a game that really resonated with me. Comfort media.
Ben's looking away.
yeah. You know, it's a game that I boot up like whenever I'm kind of in the dumps and I just gotta kind of roll in a world. It's Morrowind, baby.
Dang. I mean, that's a good one.
That's a. I know. I mean, I guess. But also, like, it's a simple man's answer, you know?
Yeah. I mean, oddly enough, I feel like the game, I can probably just, if I were to change the question a bit to give you something, I feel like, honestly, Dark Souls is a game I could, like, boot up anytime and be like, okay, I'm just going to just play it. And It doesn't feel stressful.
It's because you're good at I feel like this is just about you being good at you games. Know,
like our friend Greg Kasavin already realized. It is what it is.
There's only one person on this pod worth respecting, and it ain't me.
Yeah. So I mean, I think it'd either be like Magic the Gathering. Another thing that comes to my mind is like Chrono Cross on the original PlayStation. That's a game where like I'm definitely not beating that ever again, but I could just boot up the initial bits of it and the music, just how it makes me feel and what it reminds me of from when I played it when I was a kid. That really sticks with me.
Phil, anything else we got to say about this?
No, I mean, I would say if you're interested in kind of like a really cute, fun exploration type adventure game, Chicory is definitely one to look out for. It has like some unique mechanics that, you know, maybe not are for everybody, but it's definitely something that I think is worth checking out, especially in relation to Dylan's question. If you're interested in something that's going to have mechanics that are in conversation with the narrative and in conversation with some of the thematic ideas that it's grappling with, this is definitely a game to try for that.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I feel like we've been playing a lot of these games that are like the gameplay and the kind of thematic through line of the game are very much in kind of conversation, which is strange. I feel like a lot of the games that I play maybe outside of this are not doing that. And so it's interesting to be playing games like this where I'm like, oh, like the mechanics of it and kind of the themes of the story it's telling are super tight. Like someone thought about this pretty deeply.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, it's good to see Dylan say that Wandersong is one of his favorite games, because that's something that I haven't played, but when I was, you know, researching Greg, I definitely saw that come up a lot. So now I feel like I've got to check it out.
Guess we got to boot it up.
Well, where can we find Greg? We can find Greg at the Banov on Twitter, and you can find Alexis at Muscle Wing on Twitter. And for Chicory, I believe that it's on PlayStation 5, PlayStation 4, and PC. And I think it's going to be coming to other platforms eventually, but don't quote me on that.
You can find us at @OriginStory_. You can find me at @Sad_Radio_Lad. You can also find our website, OriginStory.show. Philip, where can they find you?
You can find me at 3D Cisco on Twitter. And yeah, we wanted to take a moment and thank Ryan Hopper for providing the awesome intro and outro music you hear every episode, as well as Melody Hirsch, who did the website and cover art for us. If you have any questions, concerns, ideas, if you want to send us an email just like Dylan did, we would really love to hear them. We'd really love to read them on the show. And you can do that at our email, which is theoriginstorypod@gmail.com.
The bar is high. You got to ask a really thoughtful, insightful question like Dylan. Bring it.
And yeah, you can catch us again here next time, Thursdays, 5 a.m. Pacific time and 8 a.m. Eastern time.
Whoop whoop.
Peace. Thank you.